are now tuned into the truth frequency.
We are TFR. TFR.
Truth Frequency Radio.
I wipe my brow and I sweat my rust. I'm breathing in the chemicals. I'm breaking in, shaping up, then checking out on the prison bus. This is it, the apocalypse. Whoa, I'm waking up. I feel it in my bones, enough to make my system.
Hello, hello, hello. Welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Holy cow, it's Monday. It happened again. It snuck up on me. Did it sneak up on you? Was that like the shortest weekend ever in the history of weekends? I think it might have been. I don't know where you guys are at. You know, I'm here in Missouri, and spring has sprung, ladies and gentlemen. It is absolutely beautiful outside. I hope you guys had some nice weather this weekend. I hope you guys made it through the Friday the 13th debacle without having any horrible, horrible luck. My horrible luck waited until this morning. About 8 o'clock when my computer crashed and threw away all the work that I had done over the weekend. But that's not a big deal because we got most of it back together in about an hour. So my Friday the 13th went off pretty smoothly. I don't know. Any horror stories out there? You guys can let me know in the chat room. Happy to see all you guys in the chat room as usual. Lots of familiar faces in there. Probably ought to say this is the Red Pill Reports radio broadcast. My name's JD. We are live right now. And as such, you can go to truthfrequencyradio.com, hop into the chat room. Listen to the show from there and also talk to a whole bunch of the other listeners that usually show up as we get going here on a Monday morning. And happy to see some people in there already. Again, today is the 16th day of March. We have broached the halfway point in March. I don't know if that means anything to you guys, but I'm looking at springtime like straight in the face right now here, and I'm happy, happy, happy. Although the bugs are out, ants are out, mosquitoes are out. So I guess, you know, it's just everything. Every rose has its thorn. Some wise guy said that at one point. Anyway, hope you guys are doing well. Appreciate you guys all being here. We got a lot to talk about today. Chris Kitsy is going to be our guest in about an hour. Chris Kitsy of the Seen and Unseen fame, of course. And also, a lot of people probably forget, he's actually the publisher of Before It's News also. So the guy has got his finger on the pulse of both alternative news and really, really techie type stuff. So he's kind of our resident tech expert. We're going to have him on today. We want to talk a little bit, try and break down this FCC regulation rulebook that just got handed out last week. I don't know if you guys have had time to peruse the 300 plus pages of new regulations and vagueness that the FCC has decided to instill upon the internet. But I'm hoping that Chris Kitsy has looked at that. There's also been a lot of goofy stories in the alternative media this weekend. A little bit of coverage in the mainstream media, but not much on this entire UK-Russia nuclear codes debacle. There's something going on here. Apparently, Russians at Kaspersky Labs, I don't know, we'll get into this in a second, but they discovered that the UK was aiming all their nuclear weapons and was potentially planning on some kind of strike this week, a preemptive nuclear strike from UK, and Kaspersky discovered it because somehow the routing of all of this very highly important information, you know, very classified, super secret military stuff was being routed, I guess, through the Ukraine for some reason, because that's standard operating procedure, right? We always route our most sensitive military data through war-torn areas and compromised servers, but apparently that's what was going on. Kaspersky discovered it, and it's been this whole big row. So this whole weekend has been pretty wild, to be perfectly honest. All eyes have been on Russia. There were a lot of rumors going around that Putin had died, and there are some ancillary stories that we do need to talk about with that today. So anyway, Chris Kitsy's going to jump on here in about an hour. We'll talk a little bit about this entire Russia situation because there is a lot of technical aspects to it. And I also want to talk about the FCC ruling. And so we'll get into all that with Chris Kitsy. Linda Moulton Howe will be joining us tomorrow. We're going to be talking about some very impressive things, ladies and gentlemen. She is breaking some news that we really can't get into right now. But if you go to redpillreports.com, You can see in the in the big news section down towards the bottom of the page there, there is an article that she has put up. It's absolutely breaking news, and she will be on the show tomorrow. But we're talking about essentially our collusion with extraterrestrials and some very high-level sources. And Linda Moulton Howe, man, I'll tell you what, she's about one of the best investigative researchers out there. I mean, she's won Emmys for the things that she has done. So definitely looking forward to having her on Tuesday. John Perkins is going to be joining us on Wednesday. He wrote a couple of books, one of them, Confessions of an Economic Hitman. We're going to talk about some of the destabilization efforts that are going on in Central and South America right now. Looking at Venezuela. And I'll tell you what, if you have not read Confessions of an Economic Hitman, you have no business talking about what's going on in the world around you right now, because if you don't understand the clandestine nature of the businesses, they really have outsourced the horrible CIA activities to private industry, and they really started doing it in the 1960s, and obviously now they've been able to hone their methods with efficiency, you know, electronics, things like that, computers. We're in a whole new ball game right now. But John Perkins is going to be joining us Wednesday, and I'm really, really looking forward to that show. Rest of the week's going to be amazing as well. I'm going to let that go for now. You guys can check out the calendar at redpillreports.com. Find out what's going on for the rest of the week. I'd also really highly recommend you guys follow us. We have right at the top of the homepage there at redpillreports.com. You can follow us on Twitter, Facebook. We've got a Scene page. You can follow us there. Definitely follow us on YouTube, because a lot of these interviews are making the rounds on YouTube, and it's a great way for you to share this information with your friends and family. Also, the mortgage crisis information is still there at the top of the page, as is the link to the mortgage crisis petition. We'd still really like to encourage people to get on board with that. That is going to be a thorn in the side of the establishment for a long time, and the more people we can get to bite their teeth into that, the quicker we can bring this entire, banking cartel to its knees, essentially. This is, again, the kind of the chink in the armor right now. Also, I want to highly recommend people check out Carrot Bars. I know I don't talk about it enough, but Carrot Bars has got a brand new website up now, and it is stunning, ladies and gentlemen. These people, Carrot Bars allow you to buy, you know, small increments of gold, 1 gram, 2.5 grams, and 5 grams, and they're all laminated in plastic. They're tamper-proof, MLBA certified, the highest quality gold that you can buy, and they just recently purchased their own gold mine. So they're cutting out the middleman, and apparently they put some of that money towards their new website because it looks stunning. They also have the autosave feature up now, so you can really set it and forget it and have a nice gold savings plan. You can also sign other people up who want to be interested in that and earn a little bit of commission. Eventually, if you get enough people signed up, you can earn your gold for free, and that's why we like Carrot Bars so much. I've been involved for about a year and absolutely love it, but there is a link at the top of the redpillreports.com homepage, and you can go check out the Carrot Bars site there. I highly, highly, highly recommend it. If you're somebody who's staying home, who understands the value of gold, especially right now with everything that's going on, with the dollar index being so high and the gold being low, it's about as good a time as you could possibly be to be in gold. Especially, man, whoo! Okay, we're going to talk about Russia today. We're going to talk about some news, but let's just remember for just a second that tomorrow on the 17th, Russia and China start trading their currency pair, first time ever. That's going to be a huge deal. We also have a lot of news coming out of the gold market right now. Big time, big time, big time. And really, in the global currency markets right now, there's a lot of things happening that have to do with gold. So if you're not holding gold and you don't want to bite the bullet and spend, you know, $1,150 on an ounce, which I, you know, a lot of people aren't in that position right now, Carrot Bars is definitely the way to go, guys. I would highly recommend check it out. If you have any questions, shoot us an email here at Red Pill. We will be more than happy to reach out to you. And also, you can join Unseen right from the top of our page. And obviously, Chris Kitsy will be on today, so we'll talk a little bit more about what Unseen is. If you're new to the program, it might be something that you have not experienced yet. Okay, that was enough of a ramble in the morning. Appreciate you guys all tuning in today. Let's get into the news. Again, all eyes were on Russia this weekend. There were so much conjecture about where Putin was this weekend. So he's been gone. He was out of the public eye for about 10 different days. Lots of theories surrounding his absence. ranging from the real tabloidy, as people were suggesting that he might be fathering a baby with his Russian gymnast, to the trivial, some people saying he had some lower back issues to deal with, to the very bizarre, which was another coup attempt at the Kremlin, and to the idiotic, which was people saying that he was dead. But all that can be cast aside because moments ago we finally learned the Russian president simply wanted some time away, and he has now reappeared for a meeting with a Kyrgyzstanian president this morning, it looks like, from Bloomberg, and there are pictures to boot. He looks healthy and fine. So Putin is just fine, apparently. So why was he gone for 10 days? Don't know, but here's what I do know. The Russian Ministry of Defense, as of this morning, has declared a state of war, activating the dead hand nuclear order issued to the Strategic Missile Forces, or the SMF. The order came, again, as it was discovered that the UK had nuclear warheads pointed towards Russia and were apparently preparing a first strike against military and civilian targets. The source of this intelligence is unknown, but it is possible that the accidental rerouting of sensitive UK nuclear data through Russia this week, was actually through the Ukraine this week, could have provided Russia with the necessary intelligence to reach this conclusion. So EU Times goes on to report that the intention of the nuclear forces of the UK preparing a first strike against the Federation, according to this report, was revealed by the FSB, which is the Federal Security Services, electronic intelligence experts working in conjunction with Kaspersky Lab, who discovered last month a massive U.S. National Security Agency cyber espionage program targeting not just Russia, but pretty much everyone else on Earth. Both the FSB and Kaspersky Lab experts, according to the Ministry of Defense there in Russia, were able to swiftly reverse engineer the computer codes involved in this massive NSA spying operation, which then enabled them to electronically obtain the launching codes and coordinates of all of the UK's nuclear weapons, showing their plans to launch a first strike against the Federation during the week of 15 March. So maybe Putin was laying a little bit low, just, you know, given all of this information coming out over the weekend. Though information of this highly successful FSB Kaspersky Lab intelligence operation has been suppressed in the mainstream media, some counter news of it has been reported by a few technical websites, including The Verge, which in their article reported yesterday titled "A Network Error Routed Traffic for the UK's Nuclear Weapons Through a Russian Telecom." That was the name of the article in The Verge, but that's pretty much the only place this thing has appeared in the Western news. But in that article, again from The Verge, they say, for the past week, something strange has been going on in the European internet. For 5 days, web traffic from Texas to certain addresses in the UK has been routed through Ukrainian and Russian telecoms, taking a detour thousands of miles out of the way. Network traffic often takes a circuitous route as a result of network congestion or interconnection difficulties, but neither one would be enough to account for these routes. Instead, this was the result of a bad route announced by the Ukraine's Vega Telecom inserting itself in between. It's partially disconcerting because of the sensitive nature of many of the sites involved. Among the dozen sites involved was the UK's Atomic Weapons Establishment, which is tasked with managing and delivering the UK's nuclear warheads. That seems like something you wouldn't have floating around on the internet. Wouldn't you think that the UK's Atomic Weapons Establishment would have some kind of like closed system? Okay, but anyway, as well as the UK's official mail service, the Royal Mail, and the U.S. defense contractor Lockheed Martin was also running a virtual private network connection that was caught up in the redirection. Upon the Ministry of Defense's confirmation of the UK's intention to launch a nuclear first strike against the Federation, the report continues, Russian military forces throughout the country were immediately activated with a special emphasis placed on massive rocket artillery maneuvers on the southern borders. Excuse me. Foreign Minister Lavrov, according to this report, notes, further warned the West this week that Moscow would respond to NATO in an adequate way as thousands of Norwegian troops neared the Russian border this week, preparing for the influx of a U.S. Marine Expeditionary Brigade, estimated to number between 14 and 18,000, whose tanks, armored vehicles, artillery, ammunition, and battle equipment have flooded into Norway over the past year. Let's see here. The MOD also said in this report that the Ministry for Civil Defense, Emergencies of Elimination of Consequences of National Disasters, and the Ministry of Internal Affairs previously issued immediate travel bans on firefighters, ambulance drivers, rescue troopers, tens of thousands of police officers, prison guards, and other law enforcement agencies who were deemed critically needed during times of war. Also, to be noted, though not contained in this particular MOD report, are reports from London that Russian personnel and officers have evacuated their embassy and that a massive activity is now being reported throughout Moscow, especially in and around Red Square. There were a lot of pictures coming out this weekend of a lot of white trucks and a lot of building materials. It almost seemed like they were getting ready to build a giant stage or something like that in Russia over the weekend in Red Square. Again, lots of pictures coming out, lots of speculation. There was a report on Saturday, I believe, that I think it ties into all this stuff that we're talking about right now, but one of the other people that they asked to stay in the country were journalists. So again, as President Putin, top political officials and political leaders are now under MOD protection. Other reports of unknown quality state that the Kremlin also advised journalists not to leave Moscow and to prepare for a quote-unquote major announcement over the next few days. Now, that, again, came out on Saturday, so we were kind of anticipating something happening on Sunday. We haven't seen anything yet, so potentially there could still be some sort of major announcement over the next couple of days coming out of Moscow. Let's see, though not specifically stated in this particular Ministry of Defense report, but strongly alluded to, are that crisis negotiations between Moscow and the West are currently ongoing and have led within the past few hours to NATO Security General Stoltenberg stating that the alliance does not plan to interfere in the conflict in eastern Ukraine. Ukraine is not a member of NATO, so there is a difference between Ukraine and NATO members because the security guarantee obviously is for NATO. Phew. I mean, we're talking about a lot of escalation. We got some major heated escalation that basically came to a head over the weekend. Russia has now got 40,000 troops on alert there. They are now officially in a state of war with the UK. It's very questionable to me how the Russians were able to get this specific information, because we're not just talking about the idea that, you know, someone clued them off that these missiles were aimed at civilian and military sites in Russia. We're talking about the fact that they were actually able to get the launch codes, which, you know, that's a little weird to me. And I guess we'll have to ask Chris Kitsie about that, because it doesn't seem like that should be something that's just floating around. But anyway, Putin's not dead. That's a good thing. His number one chief of staff, what do you want to call him? His number one guard, the guy who's responsible for protecting Putin, did die over the last couple of days. There has not been a lot of information that's come out about that. So again, the fact that his number one guy, who's also in charge of the FSB here, has been confirmed dead now, does lead you to kind of believe that there was potentially a coup. But, you know, a potential coup could have taken, somebody could have been trying to essentially take over the government or neutralize Putin over the weekend. And perhaps that was potentially why he was in hiding as well. But again, you know, the internet was just rampant with rumor over the weekend with all of this. And then right in the middle of all this, Moscow's landmark 16th century Novodevichy Convent, which is actually right there next to the Kremlin. Very well-known historical building there. It's a huge convent. It's got a ginormous bell tower. It's something like 200 feet tall. There was a huge fire that broke out over the weekend. So we're watching, you know, all this stuff unfold in Russia. We're seeing what's going to happen in Red Square and in the Kremlin there. And all of a sudden, boom, there's this ginormous blaze going on. But apparently this was just... this could have actually just been a coincidence. This building is in the process of being restored. The refurbishment began back in September. It's supposed to be done here in August, but it's basically covered in scaffolding and building materials and things like that. And apparently that's what caught on fire. The building itself wasn't really harmed, but it did look pretty concerning there in the middle of the night on Saturday when all of this was going on, especially given all the rumors about a coup attempt in Russia. But anyway, the site that did catch fire as one of the most famous tourist attractions in Moscow, has also been proclaimed as a UNESCO World Heritage Site. The site is also famous for its cemetery, where numerous prominent Russian people have been buried. Among them are writer Anton Chekhov and former Soviet leader Nikita Khrushchev and things like that. So anyway, big old fire right outside of the Kremlin. Was it coincidence? I don't know. They're saying it was not. But lots of crazy stuff going on in Russia, and obviously all eyes are still on Russia right now. We don't know what this big announcement is going to be. I kind of feel like they're probably going to take over half of the Ukraine, or perhaps they're going to come out because it was just the anniversary of the annexation of Crimea. Maybe they're going to come out and officially justify all that on air. I don't know. Maybe they're going to come out and say that they've got all the information about 9/11 and that the United States needs to stand up against their leaders. That would be cool. I'd be supportive of that. Or maybe they'll talk about aliens. I don't know. Who knows what they're going to talk about. Okay. Let's move on to some other stuff right now. Brazil. Woo, buddy. Big, big, big time protests in Brazil this weekend. We've talked about Brazil. They're essentially running out of water right now. São Paulo, essentially down. I think they have their taps only, available one day a week at this point. But, about a million people, were in the streets over the weekend after, Brazil's government is, threatening to present a package of anti-corruption measures. So again, a million people, a lot of them calling for President Rousseff's impeachment, took to the nation's streets on Sunday. Rousseff will be delivering this package again, this anti-corruption package, within days, according to the Secretary General there, and the Justice Minister, said to reporters in Brasilia after meeting with the President. So again, they're going to be delivering this package in the next few days. People are not very happy about this right now. Higher taxes and increased prices for government regulated items like gasoline are rankling Brazilians as the biggest corruption scandal in the nation's history, ensnares elected and appointed officials. The approval rating of Rousseff's government has plummeted since she won a close re-election last October, and yesterday's protests were bigger than those in June of 13, in which more than a million people decried deficient public services and demanded an end to corruption. So again, the largest demonstrations occurred in São Paulo with more than a million people pouring onto the streets, according to military police there. And the protests occurred in cities of all 24 states and the federal capital, according to the newspaper O Globo, citing military police estimates, including 100,000 protesters each in Porto Alegre and Victoria and about 45,000 in Brasilia. So right now, you know, corruption's going on. Wonder though, how much of this uprising of the people we're paying for. You just have to wonder how involved George Soros is, because this is particularly how these things start. You know, we basically go in there and pay to get the rabble roused, and, a lot of rabble. I'll tell you, a million people out in the streets. Venezuela also now staging military exercises to counter the United States threat. Venezuela on Saturday staged a military exercise to counter the alleged United States threat, deploying soldiers and partisans across the country to march man shoulder fired missiles and defend oil refinery from a simulated attack. Socialist President Nicolas Maduro has framed recent U.S. sanctions on 7 Venezuela officials as a bid to topple him. And on Saturday, his government mobilized 80,000 soldiers and 20,000 civilians as part of a 10-day military drill. Opposition leaders labeled the exercise as a farce and accused Maduro, increasingly unpopular as a result of the economic crisis, of seeking to distract Venezuelans from long queues for scarce products, sky-high inflation, and rampant crime. Some also voiced disquiet over the growing role of the military amid a larger crackdown on opposition. Last month, Caracas Mayor Antonio Ledezma was jailed, and a 14-year-old boy was shot and killed by a police officer during a protest. And Washington's move on Monday to declare Venezuela a national security threat is proven to be a godsend for the Venezuelan leader. The former bus driver and union leader has given fiery, hour-long speeches nearly every day this week, and he is now seeking to rally his base around the deep-seated distrust of the superpower. And I don't think he'll have a whole lot of trouble doing that, because it's not 1974 anymore, and despite the fact that Venezuela is going through a lot, they still have the internet. They can still do research, and they understand that the United States has been messing around in Central and South America for a really long time, and most people are pretty tired of it. So, I commend these people who are stepping up against, United States imperialism, because it needs to be stamped out. Also, the U.S. Embassy in the Saudi capital of Riyadh has canceled all consular services for Sunday and Monday due to a heightened security concern. So again, the U.S. Embassy there in Saudi Arabia, says consular service in Riyadh and Jeddah and Tehran will not be available. It's urged its U.S. citizens to take extra precautions while traveling in Saudi Arabia and to keep a low profile. On Friday, the embassy warned that Western oil workers could be the target of military attacks, and it says now that it has information that individuals associated with a terrorist organization could be targeting people working in the oil-rich Eastern Province. So just a heads up, if you are an oil worker in Saudi Arabia, first of all, thanks for listening to the show. Second of all, keep your head down. Or on a swivel, or whatever. White House is now dropping plans to slash the number of troops, U.S. soldiers in Afghanistan. They are dropping the plans to slash the number of U.S. soldiers in Afghanistan to 5,500, according to the AP. Official sources claim the withdrawal is likely to be much slower, and we're probably going to have 9,800 U.S. troops remain in Afghanistan well into 2006. So the report, citing unnamed officials, states that no final decision has been made, but discussions now are ongoing about keeping U.S. troops in Afghanistan or nearby even after 2016. It is believed that U.S. President Barack Obama will use Afghan President Ashraf Ghani's visit later this month as an opportunity to announce a new withdrawal deadline. In the past, Ghani had made it clear that he wanted the pace of the U.S. withdrawal to be slower. So Obama is scheduled to host Ghani for a number of meetings and a working lunch at the White House on March 24th. And over the past several weeks, the U.S. officials have been dropping hints about a possible delay. And in February, Defense Secretary Ashton Carter said while visiting Kabul that America was looking into the idea. So again, probably not going to be pulling our troops out of Afghanistan anytime soon, it does seem now. Here's another interesting story regarding Syria. The U.S. Secretary of State appeared to say on CBS News that America now needs to negotiate with Syria's president about a political transition in a war-torn country. But later, the State Department clarified that John Kerry was not referring to Bashar Assad. So this is a little bit of a head fake, but Kerry said the U.S. and some other countries were trying to restart talks on the resolution of the conflict in Syria, which is now entering its fifth year. And Kerry goes on to say, because everyone agrees there is no military solution, there is only a political solution. And he says he is convinced that with efforts of our allies and ever and others, there will be increased pressure on Assad. But then again, he comes back, Murray Hoff says in a statement afterwards that Kerry wasn't actually referring to the Syrian president. So who exactly we're trying to broker a deal with in Syria right now is pretty much anybody's guess, because the entire place is pretty much just war-torn and chaos right now, and nobody knows who is leading who or who is doing what or who's paying for how. Meanwhile, Assad's just trying to run his own country. Okay, we got to go to a three-minute break, guys. We come back, we got a little bit more international news. We have a little bit of national news today to cover, and then a lot of economic stuff and science stuff. So keep it right here. Three-minute break, guys. We're going to be right back.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Time and time again.
You need to come here and help us. We need assistance. Please.
Those we should be able to depend on let us down.
Federal and state and local officials saying help is on the way. Well, the folks here in Bell Harbor say show me.
Don't depend on the government to save you. Take action now so that you're prepared for the next disaster with MyPatriotSupply.com. Get the best prices on storable food, non-GMO seeds, water filtration devices, home canning equipment, survival and self-reliance books, and more at MyPatriotSupply.com. Call 866-229-0927.
We are hurting down here, and we need help immediately.
Before it's time to survive, it's time to prepare. MyPatriotSupply.com. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Nutritious food is real body armor. It builds muscle, burns fat, improves digestion, and feeds the entire body the nutrients it needs. Did you know the U.S. government banned the hemp plant from growing in the United States and classified it as a Schedule 1 drug to hide it behind the marijuana plant? People have been confused about this plant for over 80 years, and many still don't know what hemp is. So now you know hemp is not marijuana, and marijuana is not hemp. They are different varieties of the same species. HempUSA.org wants the world to know these basic facts and to help people understand that hemp protein powder is the best-kept health secret you need to know about. Remember, hemp protein powder contains 53% protein, is gluten-free, anti-inflammatory, non-GMO, and is loaded with nutrients. Call 888-910-4367, 888-910-4367, and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org.
Like a cancer that's silently spreading.
Aging for Truth with Joe Bannister. Sundays, Spirit Frequency Radio.
Back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys very much for sticking with us through that 3-minute break. Thank all of you guys for hanging out in the chat room today too. Very nice to see you guys in there this morning. Okay, so we've got a little bit more international news. Just want to cover this really quick. Hamas has rejected an offer to implement a 5-year ceasefire in exchange for Israel's termination of the Gaza Strip blockade, according to a senior Hamas official. The proposal, which was crafted by Israeli and Palestinian officials as well as Western middlemen, said as ongoing UN Special Coordinator for the Middle East Peace, Robert Seri, would have also seen the opening of an airport and the seaport in the Strip. Okay, so Deputy Chairman of Hamas, Musa Marzouk, explained Wednesday the reasoning behind the rejection, saying the deal would have widened the divide between the West Bank and Gaza. Executing the proposal would allow Israel to quote-unquote swallow the West Bank with further settlements, he said in a statement on his Facebook page. He says Israel made this proposal with the aim of separating the enclave from the West Bank so it can be swallowed with settlements, according to Marzouk there. He also says we are paying a steep price for our stance by the continued blockade and economic pressure over the Strip, but we reject any idea that would lead to the separation of the Gaza Strip and the West Bank, despite the fact that the Palestinian President Mohammed Mahmoud Abbas and his government are actively doing so with their policies. So you can still see Hamas and the Palestinian Authority government there not really agreeing on what needs to happen in terms of relationship with Gaza and Israel going forward. Oh, we got to talk about this real too. China now the world's third largest arms exporter. China has taken over Germany to become the third biggest arms exporter, although its 5% of the market still remains small compared to the combined 58% of exports from the United States and Russia, according to a new study. So again, China's share of the global arms market rose 143% during the years 2010 to 2014, a period during which the total volume of global arms transfers rose by 16% over the previous 5 years, according to the Stockholm International Peace Research Institute in a report just released this morning. Its share of the world market was up 3% in the 2009 to 2014 period, where China ranked 9th amongst the exporters of warplanes, ships, sidearms, and other weaponry, according to the Institute. And the data showed now that the growing strength of China's domestic arms industry, now producing fourth-generation fighter jets, Navy frigates, and wide range of relatively cheap, simple, and reliable smaller weapons used in conflicts around the globe. So again, China stepping up in a big way to become the third largest global arms exporter in the world. Probably not a good thing once you understand who the Shanghai Corporation Organization is. But whatever. Okay. Also, let's move on to some national news here real quick. Oh, I got to read something here with the truth about this. That's how my speed reading in the chat room right now. Good stuff. People are asking about Social Security cards and things like that. It's good questions. You guys ought to check out Roger Sales' show. It's immediately following my show here on Truth Frequency Monday through Friday, and he talks a lot about sovereignty and about getting yourself back on track in a lawful sense versus a legal sense. So definitely excited to have Roger Sales joining the crew over at Truth Frequency now. Okay, let's move back into the national stuff right now. Obviously, Ferguson still in the news. St. Louis County Police have now confirmed that the suspected shooter of two police officers early Thursday morning outside of the Ferguson Police Department is in custody. His name is Jeffrey Williams. He is 20 years old. He is of North County, St. Louis, has been charged with two counts of first-degree assault, firing a weapon from a vehicle, and two counts of armed criminal action. He's in custody right now with a cash-only bail at $300,000. And two officers were shot just after midnight as many protesters were heading home following a night of protests after the resignation of the city's police chief. And the two were standing with other officers in front of the police department on South Florissant Road working crowd control when shots rang out. It is believed that they were fired from behind the protesters. So at a Sunday afternoon news conference, St. Louis County prosecuting attorney Robert McCullough said that Williams has admitted to firing the shots that struck the officers. Williams was at the protest in Ferguson on Wednesday. He left possibly after a dispute and then later returned and fired shots from inside of a vehicle, possibly at someone other than the police. A handgun has been recovered that matches the shell casings from the scene. McCullough says that we're not 100% sure that there was a dispute, but even if the police were not the intended targets, Williams would now face the same charges. He was on probation for receiving stolen property and wanted also for failing to report to his probation officer. So, I don't know. Is that a cop out? Do you think this guy actually did this? I don't know. It does sound like he wasn't intended to be shooting at the police officers when it happened. So that's interesting. It's an interesting detail, but the fact that he would have missed any of his targets and hit two cops, it seems kind of random to me. Anyway, Jeb Bush in the news as well, obviously has been taking Hillary to task about this whole private email issue, but has been reported now by the Washington Post that Jeb Bush actually used his private email account as Florida's governor to discuss security and military issues such as troop deployments to the Middle East and the protection of nuclear plants, according to a review of publicly released records. So again, these emails include two series of exchanges involving details of Florida's National Guard troop deployments after September 11, 2001. Again, this was a review by the Washington Post. And aides to Bush said Saturday that none of the emails contained sensitive or classified information and that many of the events mentioned in them were documented in press accounts, either contemporaneously or later. But security experts say that private email systems, such as the one used by Bush, are obviously more vulnerable to hackers and that that detail, such as troop movements, could be exploited by our enemies. So Jeb Bush. However, I gotta say, not that I'm a big Jeb Bush fan. I hate all of these people equally, like, you know, with the passion of a thousand white-hot burning suns. He kept his server in his office, and then he did actually turn his entire server over to the State Department after he left office. So he actually disclosed all of his emails. So that's, you know, at least he did, he's done a lot more than Hillary has done, I'll tell you that. And there's been another, what's more, there's another, yeah, here we go. Citizens United has gotten a pretty big win here. A judge has now ordered on Friday that the State Department must turn over to the group, again, Citizens United, manifests from 47 overseas trips that Hillary Clinton made while she was Secretary of State. As the New York Times noted, Judge Gladys Kessler of the United States District Court for the District of Columbia ruled on behalf of Citizens United, which requested the manifests last July through a Freedom of Information Act request. The judge, according to the Times, ordered the State Department to release the first batch of records by April 3rd, with more being released every 2 weeks. All the documents must be given to the group no later than August 1st. So President David Bossie, who is the president of Citizens United, said clearly the United States, clearly the State Department is not getting the benefit of the doubt from judges anymore. And he also says that the Citizens United requested the flight manifest to examine whether the Clinton Foundation donors had accompanied Hillary Clinton on her overseas trips. So, man, I'll tell you what, every day, I don't know who she got mad at the AP, but there's a whole lot of Western news coverage about Hillary Clinton right now, and you would think with the position of power that she has, that would not be an issue. But it does look like it is an issue. Also, speaking of issues, a powerful U.S. Senate investigatory committee has now launched a bipartisan probe into an American nonprofit's funding of efforts to oust Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu after the Obama administration's State Department gave the nonprofit taxpayer-funded grants. A source with knowledge of the panel's activities told Fox News. So again, Netanyahu's election is tomorrow. So it'll be very interesting to find out what goes on there. I would imagine that the people there in Israel have just about as much control over the elections as the people do here. So they probably want it fairly close, but I imagine if I had to lay a bet out on the line, that Mr. Netanyahu will win by a narrow margin. Just gonna go ahead and throw that down right now. Anyway, so yeah, big old bipartisan probe into whether or not Barack Obama was meddling around with this anti-Netanyahu effort there in Israel. I'm sure we'll find out all kinds of juicy details from that as well. And just as an interesting side note here, the first direct flight from New Orleans to Cuba since 1958 took off yesterday. Took about 20 people down there, mostly business leaders and people like that who are going down to establish some relationships in Havana. But that's interesting to me, the very first direct flight from New Orleans down to Cuba ever. Well, since 1958, which might as well be forever. Okay, what else? Let's get away from the national news. I want to jump into the economic stuff. Obviously, so much stuff going on in the economy last week. All eyes were on the euro. Let's see where we're at right now. I think Truth just dropped a Baltic Dry Index 564. Thank you, Truth, for putting that into the chat room for everybody. 564, so BDI up about 2 points right now. So starting to see some more products being carried around the planet. Let's talk about where the Dow is. Dow is up 175 points right now. No idea why. 17,925. The dollar index has pulled back just a little, but we're still above the 100 mark. We're at 100.08 right now, which is about a half a percent drop. I think it was at about 100.72 over the weekend, which is pretty darn high. The euro starting to get a little bit of a boost here also with the dollar going down, so but not a lot. We're at 105.82 right now, which is about 0.75% up today in that respect. Bitcoin still looking pretty healthy. $290 will get you a bright, shiny Bitcoin right now. Gold, relatively flat in early trading, $11.52 for an ounce of gold, and $15.63 big pennies will get you an ounce of silver. That's actually up almost a percent today. Crude oil pulling back about 3% more this morning. So we're looking at $45 for a barrel of crude right now. Now, why is that not translated at all into food prices coming down? It seems really strange to me that with gas coming down more than 50% in the last 6 months, how come that hasn't translated into lower food prices at the grocery store yet? I don't understand. It's, to me, it just seems like it's all a scam, you know, at this point. Let's see here. What's all this nicey-nice in Syria the last few days? Are they going to try and use the same trick that they used on Gaddafi? That's a great question, Kaiser Chief, and I'm with you on this. There seems to be a lot of back and forth in Syria. I'll tell you what it is. It's the internet is why. People understand what's going on in Syria right now because the United States has done this so many times. Like, we can almost just look at the tea leaves and see exactly what's going to happen next in Syria. So now we've tried to, you know, get the rabble risers riled up. We've armed them. We created ISIS, which blew up onto our newly appointed, you know, allies there in Iraq. So it got way out of hand, CIA had to basically stop funding ISIS because other countries were starting to realize just how ridiculous this whole situation is. So we're going to have to backpedal in Syria in a big way. We tried clandestinely to take it over. We tried to arm people to take it over. It's just, it's not going to happen, I don't think. So, now, yeah, John Kerry falling back on, to the rhetoric about, you know, possible negotiations, just doesn't make any sense. This was again, you know, Thursday we had the report that John Kerry said we might have to use a military solution. We might have to apply military pressure to Assad, to get him to step down. Which, you know, Assad has come out and said, hey, these guys are dropping bombs on our country. We're supposed to be a sovereign nation. They riled up all these natives and armed them to try and overthrow me. It's the same thing we've done in every country going back, you know, 115 years, guys. It's par for the course, unfortunately. But anyway, that's what's going on with that. Let's move on here. We already talked about the BDI. That's everything that's there. We got to talk about – wow. Okay. We talked a little last week. Beginning tomorrow, that China and Russia are going to start their currency trade, right? The ruble, renminbi currency peg is going to start trading tomorrow. That's a big deal, guys. A lot of people aren't paying attention to that. But let's also talk a little bit about the change that is going to be happening this week to the London Gold Fix. The London Gold Fix, and you have to love the fact that they call it a fix, used to be a phone call that would happen twice a day between all the big wigs at the banks, and they would essentially ascribe a value to gold. That's how the Gold Fix operated. So this month, the physical gold market is going to undergo a very radical change when the four London fixing banks hand over the twice daily fix to the International Commodity Exchange's trading platform. This is going to happen on the 20th of March. From the 1st of April, the Financial Conduct Authority will extend its powers from regulating the participants to regulating the fix as well. This will transfer price control away from the bullion banks. Read that as it will transfer price control away from the people who have been manipulating the price of gold for 100 years, away from them, right, to, and will allow direct access to the fixing process for all direct participants and sponsored clients. So as the markets are attempting to digest this new London Gold Fix, HSBC announced last week that they are closing 7 of their London gold vaults. Yeah. During the conversation recorded on Monday, March 9th, it wasn't really clear which vaults had closed and the impact that this would have on the GLD SPDR gold-backed ETF fund, as well as the ETF securities gold-backed funded. Okay, but HSBC is the custodian bullion bank for both of these very large gold ETF funds. During the editing of the video, which is in this particular news article that I'm reading, there's more details coming out from an email that the guy who's in this video, I'm trying to basically go over the details of this video with you guys while reading it, but there are more emails that came out on the 20th of March, and basically HSBC customer relations came back and they said they're not saying that it's really the gold vault, it's just the retail safe deposit facilities. So yeah, they're closing all 7 of them, but there's really nothing to see here. They don't accept the fact, according to HSBC, that these are vaults, despite the fact that they use that terminology with the bullion dealers. But anyway, what's really interesting, aside from all of that, is that we also had this story last week about China putting all of these billboards up talking about the renminbi becoming the new choice for the world currency. I totally spaced this. I totally looked right at these billboards and spaced this, and I can't believe I did it. But if you look at the billboard, you can just do a quick start page search for renminbi billboard. You'll find it. It says RMB, the new choice, and then it says the world currency. But the O in world is a big old gold coin that somebody is dropping in there. So like a guy with a hands holding a little gold coin, dropping it into that, that world. Is that a clue of things to come? Holy cow. I can't believe I missed that. But anyway, as a quick recap, we've got a new gold fix happening this week. We've got Russia and China starting to trade their currency independently from everybody else. That's a big deal. We also have, HSBC closing 7 retail gold vaults, and now China billboards in Bangkok announcing the renminbi as the new world currency. Yeah, so that should be pretty concerning. But I do want to bring Kitsy in today and ask him a little bit about the Shanghai Corporation Organization, because I brought this up a few times on air, but I still think people are really underestimating the role that this thing is going to be playing here in the very near future. You have to understand approximately 50% of the world's population is part of the Shanghai Corporation Organization, and over 60% of the world's natural resources, including most of the world's gold. And what impact is this going to have on the remainder of the 21st century in the Western world? This is, of course, the $18 trillion debt question right now. So the Western Anglo world is debt soaked. The global economy obviously slowing to a crawl. China and Russia and other members of the SCO are really only interested in one thing, conducting business and generating more business for their countries. And the only thing the West seems to be concerned about is more war. So where are we going to be after this gold fix thing happens on the 20th? And what is that going to do to the price of gold? Is it a good time to be in gold right now? I think it might be. Also, and this is just crazy. I mean, everything that happened this weekend, it just blew my mind. But we've been talking about Russia building this alternative SWIFT system, right? So that they could essentially skirt the sanctions of the West. But, okay. Increased banking traffic the increased use of the ruble in Russia actually changed the rules over the weekend. And it now means that Russia itself has a seat on the board of the SWIFT Global Interbank Communications System. This seat change comes at a time of increased pressure for Russia to be removed from the organization in its entirety from its sanctions. So it's the first time that Russia has had a seat on the 25-member board of directors of the Society for World Bank Interbank Financial Telecommunications. So again, that's what SWIFT stands for. First time that it's had a seat on the 25-member board since it's joined in 1989. And every 3 years, the organization reconfigures the shares among the countries participating. Each country receives a number of shares in proportion to the traffic in the system. This reallocation has led to changes in the structure now of the board. And by the end of 2014, the SWIFT traffic growth in Russia allowed us to reach 13th place in the world. So Russia had increased its stake to a level that allows it to nominate a candidate to the board of directors, according to the executive director of the Russian National SWIFT Association, Roman Chernov. He told this to RBC over the weekend. And on that basis, Russia gained a seat as Hong Kong lost one, and Belgium gained an additional seat, giving it two, and the Netherlands lost a seat, giving it just one, according to the banker. So the threat of disconnection from SWIFT does not decrease after the appearance of the Russian representative on the board of directors, since the decision to disconnect from SWIFT is independent. But such a presence does mean now that they can influence decisions made by SWIFT in terms of the introduction of new standards, service improvements, and tariff systems. So big, big, big change here that China, or that Russia now, again, being added to the board of directors on the SWIFT platform. That is a huge, huge deal. Also, at the end of last year, the Central Bank of Russia launched its alternative to the SWIFT for domestic payments, which was part of a broader move, again, to get away from Western financial dominance. And the new service allows credit institutions to transmit messages in a SWIFT format through the central bank to all of Russia's regions without restrictions. The SWIFT system connects more than 10,000 banks in more than 200 countries and provides the messaging that makes trillions of dollars of international payments possible. SWIFT is currently one of Russia's main connections to the international banking systems, and in Russia, Rosswift is the second largest worldwide SWIFT association after the United States. The interbank system has 23 offices around the world, and the new board of directors will be approved at the annual meeting of SWIFT's shareholders in June of 2015, and the Russian director will now assume the post for a three-year period. That is super interesting, in my opinion. Also, March is only half over, but demand for the American Eagle gold coins from the U.S. Mint has now surpassed the previous month's sales. According to sales figures, as of Tuesday, the U.S. Mint has sold 41,000 ounces of gold from the precious American Eagle denominations, up from 37,000 ounces sold throughout February in its entirety. So this month's sales, again, have almost caught up to last year's figures, as 42,000 ounces were sold in March. Year to date, the U.S. Mint has sold more than 240,000 ounces of gold in American bullion coins. American Eagle bullion coins, down from 287,000 ounces sold during the first 3 months of 2014. So, really, really good time to be hopping into gold right now, with the price of gold pretty flat, dollar index exceptionally high. I would definitely, if I had the money, be hopping into gold, and I definitely do my weekly 1 gram purchase. That's something I can definitely do. So I usually have myself set up to do that, and especially now that Karatbars has the automatic thing, that just makes it super easy. You get 4 grams a month. At the end of the month, you know, you pay your $20 to have it FedEx insured overnighted from Copenhagen, and bam, you got gold. I'll tell you, I gave quite a bit away for Christmas as well, and people were really stoked on that as a gift. So you know, one of those little 1 gram gold pieces could probably really come in handy if things go way bad in the future. Just saying. A multi-currency payment system is now going to be available in the breakaway eastern Ukrainian region starting on Sunday, according to an official resolution. So we're talking about Luhansk here. The payment system will allow the population of the self-proclaimed Luhansk People's Republic to bypass what its officials describe as an economic blockade by Kiev authorities, who previously shut all the banks in the region in an attempt to cut off financial flows to the LPR. The resolution cites a general shortage of cash in the national currency, hryvnia, and lack of access to consumer goods as the main reason behind this decision. So transactions will be enabled in four different currencies: the Ukrainian hryvnia, the Russian ruble, the U.S. dollar, and the euro. And in November of 2014, Ukrainian President Petro Poroshenko signed a decree essentially imposing an economic blockade in the southeastern Ukraine. The decree stipulated suspension of operation of state institutions and banks in the militia-controlled territories. The move left large numbers of people without pensions and other social benefits. It has drawn criticism from the UN Refugee Agency and the Organization for Security and Cooperation in Europe, who also said that the disruption of welfare aid brought the regions to the verge of a humanitarian crisis. So, again, moving to a multi-currency payment system there in Luhansk as they are struggling after Poroshenko has basically instilled an economic blockade against against the eastern side of the country there. I got to wet my whistle. Hang on just one second here, guys. How much do we love coffee? Coffee's awesome. Okay. Also, there's just so much crazy banking news. I hate to just have to keep pausing like this, but I keep having to wrap my head around these stories. So last week marked a rare rift in the special relationship between the UK and the US. The countries clashed publicly after the UK announced that it will be joining the Asian Infrastructure Investment Bank, the AIIB, which is the new multilateral financial institution that is a result of China's budding efforts to project its own influence abroad. The AIIB was launched in October with the backing of 20 other countries led by China, but the UK is the first of the G7 leading economies to join the bank. Japan, South Korea, Australia, and US and other leading Western economies declined to be among the founding members, and the bank is about one-third the size of the Asian Development Bank, with $50 billion in capital as opposed to the ADB's $165 billion. The AIIB is just one of China's recent efforts to remake the world's multilateral institutions into its own image. The partnership with India, Russia, Brazil, and South Africa, China also set up the new development bank, also known as the BRICS Bank last year, as well as a development bank led by the Shanghai Cooperation Organization and a currency reserve fund to help countries cushion against financial crises and shocks. Washington has lobbied its allies not to join the AIIB. An Obama administration official quoted unanimously by the Financial Times accused the UK of a trend of constant accommodation of China, which is not the best way to engage a rising power. But I think the rats are starting to jump ship, and I think that's becoming more and more clear as the world keeps spinning. So United States not real happy that the UK has decided to join up with the Asian Investment Bank there. Interesting stuff. What a crazy planet we live on, ladies and gentlemen. We got to go to a 3-minute break. When we come back, Chris Kitsy will be joining us. Very excited to be having him back on the program. He's our resident tech expert. We're going to be talking about the new FCC rules. We'll probably talk a little about Hillary's emails and probably some other stuff too. Maybe this unusual routing of nuclear secrets through the Ukraine. Standard operating procedure, I am sure. Keep it right here, guys. 3-minute break. We'll see you soon.
Chris and Sheree Geo here, founders of Truth Frequency Radio. We just wanted to take a moment to thank all of you for making TFR the biggest and the best independent radio station out there.
When we first entered the alternative media scene in 2009, we were really taken aback by the amount of infighting, backbiting, fear-based reporting, and ego-driven personalities. That's when we knew we had to set ourselves apart and set a new standard in broadcasting. And thus, TFR was conceived as a listener-supported station with no corporate or outside influence and limited commercial interruptions.
You can support our efforts by signing up for a VIP membership at truthfrequencyradio.com/signup or by making a donation at truthfrequencyradio.com/donate.
For less than $4 a month, you can ensure that TFR continues broadcasting for years to come. Real people, real radio.
Wherever you are, make it TFR.
We are submersed in a construct that was designed to break us and keep us broken. But it hasn't. It failed. We still go on because we were designed from an eternal template of infinite creativity and not a synthetic house of cards built on pride and false power. Breaking free from the programs and paradigms that hold us down takes courage, endurance, tenacity, and trust. The reason it is so hard is because to be a free and sovereign being, we have to smash every lie, even if it hurts. It is good to be reminded of how resilient, unbreakable, magnificent, and powerful we truly are. And if anything provides a foundation for that, it is the book, Our Universal Journey. Go to ouruniversaljourney.com.au.
Archaeology, astronomy, alchemy, secrets of the Holy Bible, hidden codes of the Quran, demonology, Tesla technology, solar power, extraterrestrials in the ancient world. More than 500 documentaries, an experimental film lab of cutting-edge music and art, full-length movies, conference reports, and weekly TV shows. The Enigma Channel is the world's first truly global TV station. www.enigmatv.com. Intelligent television for planet Earth.
Wherever you are, make it Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys so much for sticking with us through that 3-minute break. I really appreciate you guys being here with me in the morning on a Monday, because it's a Monday right now. I'm telling you right now, we're right knee deep in a Monday. I am trying to get a hold of Chris Kitsy, and I'm not having any luck right now, guys, so I apologize about that. I'm going to try a couple more times, and we will see if we can't get him to join us on the program. Again, we're going to be talking a little bit about these new FCC guidelines and some of the other ancillary techie type stuff that's going on. We're just going to keep trying to reach out to him. So if you hear a cell phone ring, that's what's going on.
You've reached my voice.
Still getting the voicemail here. So we'll see if we can get the producer to reach out and see what the heck is going on. Hopefully Chris is doing okay out there. But we have plenty of news that we can get back into to talk about today. There's not any shortage of that. And if we're unable to get him... we will just go ahead and open up the phone lines as we like to do around here occasionally, hear from all of you guys out there and let me know how your Monday is going so far. So again, we'll go ahead and open up the phone lines too if you guys have comments or questions about all of the craziness that's going on over the weekend with Russia and with some of the economic changes that are taking place. If you guys have speculation or would like to have just a little commentary section like that, that would be great. 866-37-TRUTH is the number if you'd like to call in. You can call in 866-37-TRUTH or 866-378-7884. As I said, we'll try and continue to reach out to Chris Kitsy. I know he's got a lot going on in his life, so we're always thankful that he can take some time out to talk to all of us. But again, phone lines are open. If you guys have anything you'd like to talk about or any of you guys in the chat room want to give us a holler, that would be super awesome. We'll go ahead and hop back over into the news for a second here and see. Well, maybe we'll try Chris one other time here and just to hedge our bets and see if perhaps we can get through to him here. Definitely enjoy talking to Chris. It's more fun to have
Chris. Yes.
Doesn't sound like it's going to happen today, guys. Okay, well, anyway, moving on, let's hop back into a little bit of economic stuff as we were talking about the new gold fix that's coming down the pipe. We've got Russia and China basically teaming up to do some currency exchanges right now. Obviously, China making major, major efforts to promote the renminbi as the new world currency. And isn't it interesting? They're using that subliminal advertising on their billboards to show that that new global currency is going to be asset backed. And I'll tell you, the idea that they could be setting the price of gold here coming up pretty soon is going to make that very, very interesting. I don't think the price of gold is going to go down. I think it's been artificially suppressed for a very long time. So that's what's going on there. Okay, let's talk a little bit about Target right now. Target stores not having a good month as well. They announced yesterday they will be laying off 1,700 people from the Minneapolis headquarters, and it will announce also that it will not be hiring 1,400 currently open positions. So this is 3,100 decent-paying jobs gone in an instant. These are, of course, breadwinners and families and mortgages and house payments and things like that, all of them now unemployed. Meanwhile, the NFP report last week, which at this point is pure propaganda built on outright lies, claims that the unemployment rate in the United States is a mere 5.5%, which I think is pretty ridiculous at this point. Real numbers, once you start counting the people who fall off on the other side of the list, the people who are underemployed or who don't have as much employment as they like, that number definitely goes up into the 20 percentile range. So that's a big number. Anyway, also just a reminder, guys, phone lines are open. So if you guys have any comments or questions, please hop on the phone. Give us a call. We'd love to hear from you. Okay, what else is going on? There's a new petition going around right now to cancel all student loan debt. We obviously had the story last week about President Barack Obama basically directing his cabinet and White House advisors to work with the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau to study whether or not consumer protections recently applied to mortgages and credit cards, such as notice and grace periods after loans are transferred, could be then used in the same respect to help borrowers pay off student loans. So anyway, the agencies will develop recommendations for regulatory and legislative changes for all student loan borrowers, including possible changes to the treatment of loans in bankruptcy proceedings and when they were borrowed under fraudulent circumstances. I'd have to remind all of you that just about any loan that you've ever taken was under fraudulent circumstances, because again, it's one of the little tricks that the bankers like to play on you. They like to pretend that they have the money that they're going to loan you, but they don't actually have any money. They monetize your promissory note, which means you didn't know that when you signed your loan, which means you didn't get to consider all the ramifications of your loan. And unless there is an actual meeting of the minds, that loan, that contract is not valid. So anyway, a big old petition right now on the White House website to cancel all student debt. I don't really think that's a very good idea. I mean, we're talking about $1.2 trillion in debt, and you don't just cancel debt. Cancel, you know, debt doesn't just go away. One person's debt is another person's asset. So, you know, I can't imagine where these people are coming from that we think we're just going to cancel all that. But I think changing the bankruptcy rules and also educating people to understand how contract law works would make a lot of sense in this respect, because then we can actually figure out, you know, what in the world is going on and whether or not the contracts that you're a part of are a contract that you want to be continuing with. Again, I would highly recommend listening to Roger Sales' show after this one, because he talks about this stuff a lot and he is incredibly intelligent. And I'm talking about a guy who literally wrote the book on sovereignty and understanding the difference between legality and lawfulness. So cannot recommend Roger's show enough, and very happy to have him over at Truth Frequency as well. Really appreciate you guys who are showing support to the show, by the way. I've gotten some really great emails this weekend, and it's just really nice to see new people kind of coming into the fold, becoming new listeners, and I know it's because of the listeners that we have out there right now. Truth Frequency really has got the best listeners on the planet, as far as I'm concerned. The fact that you guys are doing your part in spreading the information and spreading the show, we can't thank you enough. I mean, we couldn't do this without you guys. And really, to be honest, there'd be no reason to be here without you guys. So again, appreciate all you guys in the chat room. Appreciate everybody who is showing support to both Truth Frequency Radio and RedPillReports.com, as well as the other hosts on the network. Just so much good stuff. So much good stuff. Okay. We'll get away from the economic stuff here right now because, well, let's check one more time. Since we're moving forward, I'll check what the markets are doing here again, just out of curiosity. Let's see. Dow's up 200 points now. Okay. Dollar index still above 100. That's good. And Forex, Euro still down below 106. Okay. Moving on here. Let's go to some science and tech news, because there has been some pretty cool stuff that has come out recently. This is probably my favorite story recently. There are new urinals, and I know we're going to talk about pee here for just a second, but just bear with me here. Researchers have now recently discovered how to harness the energy from an extremely unlikely source, human pee-pee. Urine actually contains minerals that can be used to generate electricity. A new project developed by researchers at the University of the West of England in Bristol and Oxfam is able to harness this renewable source of energy in a simple and convenient way. They actually developed a urinal that is connected to a microbial fuel cell that turns the urine into electricity. The first prototype of the electricity generating urinal has been now installed at the university, and the team hopes to someday bring this technology to third world countries where it is needed even more desperately. The microbial fuel cell works by employing live microbes, which feed on urine, which is their fuel, for their own growth and maintenance. And then the MFC is an efficient system which taps a portion of that biochemical energy used for microbial growth and converts that directly into electricity. So we are really, truly talking about pea power. This technology is about as green as it gets, and we do not need to use fossil fuels, and we are effectively using a waste product that will be in plentiful supply, according to the professor and director of Bristol Bioenergy Center. He said this in a statement, as I said, on Sunday. And the technology has also been implemented in many other circumstances, including devices that charge cell phones, and as well as efforts to power astronauts' equipments with their own urine. I know I don't want to come on the air all the time and talk about pee, but how cool is that? I mean, that is neat, I think. We're taking what would typically be a waste, something that we would have to treat, and they're turning it directly into power. They're using it on this university to power lights around campus at night. So not only are they, recovering energy, but they're actually providing safety for the people there in the community. And anytime you can knock two birds out with one stone like that, I'd have to love it. I just have to love it. Also, speaking of stuff I love, there are a couple new free smartphone apps. And of course, I don't have a smartphone, but if I did, I would have one of these apps, because these two apps have the power to completely eliminate Monsanto, aspartame, high fructose corn syrup, processed foods, all kinds of garbage, right? So despite the numerous outcries for GMO labeling, nobody really knows if the food they're buying contains GMOs or not until now. This new app called Buycott, B-U-Y-C-O-T-T, was unleashed in May of 2013, but it was actually temporarily taken off of the market because their server could not handle all the traffic to their website. At one point, the Buycott app was being downloaded at a rate of 10 downloads per second, but the app is now once again available for all smartphones. You might have to be a little bit patient because, again, they're still having a lot of trouble providing this app because the people want this app again. But Buycott is a free smartphone app that allows you to scan any given product at the grocery store and not only tells you which foods are ultimately linked to Monsanto and their GMOs, but also companies who are engaging in cruelty to animals or other negative behaviors. You can also view the family tree of any given product to see which companies are tied into corporate conglomerates who have a record of unethical testing or practices. And additionally, you can even start user-created campaigns to either support or boycott specific products. For example, you could start a campaign against any company who did not support GMO labeling or Prop 37 in California. Another beneficial app is called Fugicate, F-O-O-D-U-C-A-T-E, Fugicate. And while this app does not tell you if your product contains GMOs or not, it does tell you many of the negative ingredients in any given product, such as nitrates, aspartame, high fructose corn syrup, etc. And it gives you nutritional advice on why certain ingredients should not be, or, why you shouldn't be eating these things, why they're not beneficial to your health. So between the two of those, you could scan a food product with Fugicate, find out that it's got a whole bunch of stuff in it that you don't want to eat, and it'll actually tell you why you don't want to eat things like aspartame or high fructose corn syrup, things like that. And then at the same time, you could use this other one, Buycott, to check the products that you're actually buying and make sure they're not tied to other companies as a subsidiary or something like that, tied to another company that is actually out working to destroy GMO labeling initiatives and things like that around the country. So this really puts the power of the shopper back into your hands. And I really like that. I think this is a monumental app that everybody should own because, how many trips through the grocery store would it take, with this app to completely reorganize your entire shopping list? Well, I mean, a lot of us listeners probably aren't in this mode where we still, buy all this garbage, but there are probably a lot of friends and families that we have, and wouldn't this be a neat way to promote healthier eating and to also eliminate more of the money out of the coffers of places like Monsanto and PepsiCo, Frito-Lay, all of these people that are spending so much money with the grocery organizations to boycott or to not carry through on the GMO labeling initiatives. Buycott is the name of the first one and Fugicate is the other one, and both very, very cool. And if I had a smartphone, I'd be all over that. Okay. I think Kev Baker's in the chat room. How are you doing today, sir? Appreciate all you guys being in the chat room also. But, I think I heard you mention the other day, Kev, about this article that broke, talking about scientists sending electricity wirelessly through the air and just how miraculous and amazing this, this entire program is. Japanese scientists have made this breakthrough step towards developing new energy sources for humans in the future. It's always in the future. Everything always happens in the future. It's always the carrot on the stick, ladies and gentlemen. But again, Japanese scientists made this huge breakthrough step, for the first time ever in the history of the world, transmitting electric power wirelessly to a pinpoint target using microwaves, except that's all total crap, total garbage. That was actually done in the early 1900s by Nikola Tesla, if I'm not mistaken. You can go and do some research there, because obviously Nikola Tesla was transmitting wireless electricity 100 years ago. There's a lot of conjecture out there, potentially also that the Egyptians are doing the same thing. There's a big story about J.P. Morgan climbing to the top of one of the pyramids, taking a wine bottle wrapped in wet newspaper and holding it up to the sky until sparks started to emit, because it is a conduit for electricity, and it was so violent, the sparks, that it actually threw one of his guides off of the pyramid, apparently. So it was at that point that J.P. Morgan realized that Nikola Tesla was on the right track, but that he wouldn't be able to meter it, or something like that, to that effect. I'm not really sure. Hey, we have a phone call, and I think I know who it is. Let's go to our favorite caller in North Carolina. Hang on 1 second. Hello, caller in North Carolina. Fran, how are you today?
How did you know it was me, JD?
Well,
that's getting scary.
I recognize your last name now, and I you're the only caller that we usually have from North Carolina, so I'm just going to – eventually I'll say that to someone else, and they'll be offended. But I'm always happy when
true.
You call. How are you doing? How was your weekend, Fran?
Not too bad for the most part.
Good.
Given the usual stuff, but we'll have to change the rating on as to how many calls you get comes from North Carolina besides me. I got several points for you. One, I know this does seem probably very explanatory for that matter, but I find it kind of ironic, although lamely ironic, that Federal Reserve, which is a joke to start with,
yes,
has not from 0%, even a quarter or a half or whatever the case is, if they did it all. Now, by contrast, your local financial bank has an interest rate of a given percentage or whatever, regardless of whether it's a checking savings, a CD, an IRA, who knows what, ad nauseum. And when I start to think about it, because otherwise I wouldn't give it a second thought as far as that part goes.
Okay.
Now, on to the second aspect. I can think of ways of using my own urine, thank you very much, that's helpful at my end, and I have to be having some corporation or company trying to come up with some gizmo or whatever, which is quite clever, but I can come up with ways of my own of using that just the same, and not have to worry about having my physical body used as a form of kinetic energy to further fuel the matrix, for that matter.
Yeah, I can see that. I can understand that point. What I like about it, though, is the idea that you could, A, move it on to third world countries where they don't, you know, where feeding into the matrix isn't really a concern. You know, these people just want to be able to do anything. And I also like the idea that we could use that at home, you know, that a lot of people, especially if you go off grid, one of the major constraints to being off grid is what you're going to do in terms of what you're going to do with your stuff, you know, and by stuff, I mean your stuff. You're going to either build an outhouse or you're going to have to do a, you know, like a, what are the big underground vaults called? I can't think of the name, with the leech lines. You know what I'm talking about. It's a big tank
right underground.
I can't think of what it's called. So you either have to do that. That can be really expensive
to put a
tank in like that. That can be really expensive. And, so to be able to take something like this that you're always going to have anyway and be able to use it directly for electricity, I think that's pretty cool. I personally think that, you know, technology is always just the tool. You know, we can always take these things and use them for good or use them for evil, but to negate the actual technology, I don't ever like to do that, because so I like to try and just espouse the potential of something like this. And again, well, even true. If they're using it on the at the university right now, you know, they're using it to illuminate lights that keep people safe at night. So, you know, I don't see a whole lot of, like, evil we're feeding into the Matrix type stuff, although it is, you know, another commodity that they are stripping away from people and then, you know, absorbing that value. So I could see that. I could see that argument.
University like that, I mean, they're actually putting it to a functional use that's helpful to the people themselves.
Right.
As far as between the difference between liquid and solid waste from a human being, you'd have the process. You'd have your source of fertilizer,
mm-hmm.
depending on what the person's been ingesting, of course, mind you. But
right. Well, and they already do that now. You can go online and you can see that video of Bill Gates drinking water that came from his recycled waste within like 20 minutes. But there are companies out there that now take the human waste and recycle it into fresh drinking water, and then the rest of it goes into some kind of basically what you're saying, like a fertilizer type thing, which again, third world country type stuff. If we're trying to get them on track, you know, why we don't take a whole bunch of people who understand permaculture over there and completely permaculture and terraform, you know, their property and teach them how to be self-sufficient. They don't really need that much. They need water, and we can accomplish that with technology, and they need a little of electricity. And if we can accomplish both of those things, then the whether or not we're going to use them for good obviously becomes the question, or how much, you know, we're going to charge these people to use these things obviously becomes the question.
Which reminds me of one thing. If you could actually imagine using maybe 1% of what is spent in military spending for in other countries that involve a false flag situation, or whatever the case is, or even here in the States, having 1% of fraction of that spending used in, say, here in the U.S. or other countries or whatever that are lacking such arenas that you just mentioned, that would just transform so much, so many ways for a lot of people's lives in other locations that don't have access that people in the U.S. generally have access to water that people have access here in the U.S., unless they have access to a well, is basically overtreated to start with. But generally just having clean water is like, to them it's like, that's like gold.
Well,
actually,
yeah.
I shouldn't have said.
It should be like that for everybody. You know,
frankly, I really shouldn't have said, because a lot in some countries, some people, such as in the so-called power elite, that are arena that are actually using water as gold.
Oh yeah.
And so, as a result, you get Asia, in particular, as far as China is concerned, and so forth, ad nauseum. And it's no wonder, along with the geoengineering, why the not so much the mist is having to deal with major droughts and the water levels going down and whatever. But kind of an interesting contrast to that is the fact that there is water that we're supposed to have, but accessing that even Deborah Tavares gives mention about.
Mm-hmm.
So it's almost a two-edged sword in a sense.
Well, it is, and it's in my opinion, the reason that they're going after this water right now is because they, you know, we're talking about Bush, and we're talking about, you know, Pickens, I think is his name. What's his name? T.J. Boone Pickens or whatever. Yeah, he's got all the, they're buying up water tables in Peru and stuff like that. But you know, what's interesting is I was reading over the weekend, I was going through, Confessions of an Economic Hitman again, because John Perkins is going to be our guest on Wednesday, and he was talking about, well, the first call that we ever got here at the show was a guy named Obi who called in, and he said he was working in the oil industry for a long time through the 80s and 90s, and that there was a little extra benefit to the whole fracking culture was that it opened up all these underground caverns for the you know, the main industries to dump all their toxic waste and stuff into. And he said that had been going on from, you know, throughout the 60s, and then we had Aaron Dykes and Melissa Melton on, and they had done a lot of research and came to the same conclusion.
Right.
But then I was reading in this Confessions of an Economic Hitman, he's talking about going down to Ecuador and Peru, and we're talking about the same time frame. and even less regulation, even less regulation down there for what they were able to put back into the ground in some of these other countries. So, you know, we've spent 50 years now through major industry destroying the water tables of the world, especially here in America and Central and South America. And I'm with you though. I'm very concerned. Obviously, you know, California is about a year away from being out of water. The people of Brazil right now are on major, major water rations. And then you've got countries like Saudi Arabia who just built the largest desalination plant in the world. So obviously the money is out there to fix these problems. The same thing with California. That's a controlled drought. You know, we are making, if we can make it rain in Missouri, we can make it rain in California. And we could also build a ginormous desalination plant there and just solve all these problems with technology. But we're not choosing to do that. We want to control the resource, use it as leverage against the people. I mean, it's just, it's very typical, par for the course.
Nailing it.
Yep.
It, and it's very sad. And as far as the available in California on the West Coast, the question is whether or not what's left over is actually being generous, or if that's actually very
conservative.
What's actually available?
Right.
I mean, a lot of numbers that are being presented poll wise. I, of course, that's almost a bleed over. A lot of numbers that are presented, or they can be understated.
I agree. I agree.
So well, as a result, whenever I see with various news and polling that they do or whatever for a given subject matter, I'm like, yeah, right, in your dreams.
Well, you know, we've talked about it on air before. I think I talked about it on when I was on a different show. But the polling, to me, is just another control mechanism. What they do is they put a poll out. You know, and they say, this is what the mainstream perspective is. This is what, you know, 70% or 80% of your friends and family all think. Because that's very polarizing. You see that and you say, oh, I'm not in that group. What do those people know that I don't know? Or, you know, I'm not in that group. I need to change my perspective so I'm in that hole. And they can also use those polls to identify, you know, who out there really does I can't say the word right now. My brain just locked up. You know, who resonates with the message on the opposite side of the coin.
Okay,
so they can isolate those people. So I think the polling is just, it's more this whole Delphi kind of stuff. Yeah, just like Deborah Tavares talks about. It's just controlling the dialogue. You know, it's not saying, it's like the, let's talk about gay marriage for a second. You know, the gay marriage debate. Should a man and a woman be allowed to be married under the eyes of the state, or should it only be male to male? Those are the two sides of the coin that everybody wants you to focus on. The real coin is why in the hell is marriage a political institution in the first place? That's the question. That's the, or it's the same thing with drugs. Should they be legal? Should they not be legal? Where's the question? It's my body. What gives you the authority to tell me what I can put in it or not? You know, that's the Delphi technique that Deborah Tavares talks about all the time, is that you outline the two counterpoints and you make sure people are in those two camps, and you don't ever let anybody get macro enough to actually address the overarching questions. You know, those overarching questions are not, we don't want to talk about those. They don't want you thinking out of the box like that. They want to control both sides of the issue. So that's what the polls
are. As a result, those other the subjects that are used as wedge issues are used to, gosh, I'm trying.
It's a divide and conquer.
There you go.
Yeah.
I'm
hearing some bumper music, Fran. I got to let you go because we are going to go to a commercial break. I really appreciate you calling in. I hope you're having a wonderful Monday. If anybody else out there would like to call in, the phone lines will be open when we get back from this commercial break.
Take it easy. Have a good one. Later.
See you later. Bye. I believe we're going to a commercial break. I'm going to keep talking just in case, because my clock is showing me with a couple of minutes.
Hey, Big Mouth. Yeah, you. Listen, I want you to put the word out on the street. Tell your coworkers, your family, your paisanos, that my good friend, Joe Joseph, is doing a good thing here. He's sticking his neck out for me, for Sil, and for all the people in the world. Isn't that right, Sil?
He's part of the family now, T.
That's what I thought. So tune in to him right here on Freedom Link, Monday to Friday, exclusively on the Truth Frequency Radio. Yeah, they're watching you. Big deal. They're watching me, too. They're watching everybody. So grow some cojones and give them something to watch and listen to. Make them earn it. Give them paperwork until they choke. That's right. I know you won't let me down. So you're going to put the word out about my good friend, Joe Joseph, right? Good. Now do me a favor and get out of here.
After work, I'm so tired that I want to be left alone to sleep.
Hey, listen to me.
Who are you?
I'm you years ago when you felt healthy and young and everything worked on your body. Do you remember that?
Yes. I wish I felt like that now.
You can feel like that again with a new microplant powder formulation called Iodine Now. It cleans the entire body from head to toe and feeds the body what it really needs. You'll be in a better mood and you'll find more drive in your romantic life.
Really?
I gotta try Iodine Now and feel good again. It also protects you from radiation, heavy metals, fluoride, chlorine, and bromine, including cancer and most major diseases. You'll be amazed. You can be your own doctor. I want to keep you out of the hospital and off pharmaceuticals.
Wow, why are you so nice to me?
Because I'm you. You're out of shape, and I need a better-looking future.
Call 888-910-4367. That's 888-910-4367. Iodine Now, only at MUSA.org.
We all know the importance of having storable foods, but what about when the food runs out? What then? For real food independence, you need a supply of non-hybrid seeds. Introducing the Survival Seed Vault from MyPatriotSupply.com. The Survival Seed Vault is sealed for freshness and includes 20 varieties of easy-to-grow non-hybrid seeds for only $37.95. For less than $40, you've got real food independence. And the Survival Seed Vault includes detailed planting and seed-saving instructions. Imagine the barter power you'll have when the food supply does collapse. Right now, save $9 instantly when you buy three or more Survival Seed Vaults from MyPatriotSupply.com. Same day shipping on all orders, plus free shipping on orders over $49. Call 866-229-0927. That's 866-229-0927. Or discover more emergency preparedness products at MyPatriotSupply.com. That's MyPatriotSupply.com.
TFR Roundtable, Saturdays, on Truth Frequency Radio.
Welcome back to the broadcast, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you guys very much for sticking with us through that 3-minute break. We are live right now. It's the second hour of the show. Normally we would have a guest right now. We were unable to reach Chris Kitsy, so we have the phone lines wide open right now. If anybody would like to call in, talk about some of the news, you have questions or comments about what was going on in Russia, things like that. What were we talking to? Tabby just said something in the chat room. I'll let you guys know when we go to break, I get kicked out of the chat room. So anybody that says anything during the break, I can't scroll back to see. It's just one of the burdens with having the chat room inside of the call board here. So I kind of have to bounce back and forth. So if you guys said something during the break, I didn't see it. So I don't know what we're talking about right now. I agree. There should be a video on how to juggle. We should do a whole video on just how it is that everything works behind the scenes here, because it is wild stuff. I'll tell you what. There's a lot of technical stuff going on. Very technical stuff going on. Okay, let's jump back into some news right now. Again, though, the phone lines are wide open. 866-37-TRUTH, 866-378-7884. If you guys would like to join in on the conversation today, we'll hop back over into some news here real quick because, as usual, lots of stuff going on. Talking a little bit about, let's see if we get the health stuff up here. We talked a little bit about this whole wireless energy transmission thing happening in Japan. All of these groundbreaking experiments and things like that always has to be off in the future. Do you ever notice that? How all this stuff, it's 2015 and we've been talking about these things for years and years and years. And here we are, another story saying, oh, we've got this great breakthrough technology thing. And if any luck happens, we'll have it, you know, coming down the pike in 30 years or something like that. It's stupid. But here's somebody who's not waiting around and is not doing something far off in the future. And again, if I had $1 million to invest right now, I would be all over this, ladies and gentlemen. Tesla right now is building the ultra-speed Hyperloop transport. The construction is supposed to begin next year in California. So the construction of an ultra-high-speed transportation network called the Hyperloop is planned to start in Central California next year. The concept belongs to Elon Musk, founder and product architect of innovative companies such as SpaceX and Tesla Motors, and will be implemented through the company Hyperloop Transportation Technologies, or HTT. The futuristic transit system will allow passengers to travel between Los Angeles and San Francisco in only a half an hour, and it will only cost $20 per ticket. How amazing is that? Unbelievable. According to Elon Musk's vision, the Hyperloop is a 400-mile-long network of above-ground tubes with very low air pressure inside of them, which allows bus-sized capsules to travel through those tubes at nearly supersonic speeds, approaching 800 miles an hour. However, in reality, the first track will only be 5 miles long, and the transportation capsules will only reach the speed of 200 miles an hour. So again, they're building this 5 mile stretch to allow them to completely test the technology, from the boarding process to all the safety procedures, pretty much everything except for the very high speed, according to the HTT CEO Dirk Ahlborn. The high-speed transportation system will be located between San Francisco and Los Angeles in the self-contained residential community called Quay Valley. It will be a 75,000-resident city powered exclusively by solar energy and containing 25,000 housing units, as well as schools and entertainment infrastructure and a business park. The construction of Quay Valley is also expected to begin in 2016. According to the originator of the concept, Quay Hayes, such non-polluting public transportation network as the Hyperloop will be a perfect fit for his futuristic city. He says, with Quay Valley, we are creating a community built on economic, environmental, and social stability, sustainability, and part of this is seeking to reduce car dependency. For these reasons, the Hyperloop is the ideal clean community transit system for Quay Valley. So despite the fact that the entire concept looks pretty grandiose, Ahlborn emphasizes that the project is quite real and goes much further than being just a scaled-down model. Almost 200 engineers from NASA, Yahoo, and Airbus are involved with the project realization. There are also a group of 25 students from the University of California, UCLA, working on different issues, including cost estimates, route planning, and capsule design. The estimated cost of the project is $100 million and is expected to be funded through a direct public offering. I'll tell you right now, if you are lucky enough to be one of the 100 people to invest in this Hyperloop project, you're going to make out like a bandit here. I'll tell you right now. But again, the Hyperloop is planned to be finished and launched between the years of 2019 and 2025. But again, the direct public offering will start later this year as well. So they're going to be looking for investors. But can you imagine Los Angeles to San Francisco in a half an hour for only $20? I mean, that is going to absolutely revolutionize transportation. You wonder, though, how the Hyperloop tube would hold up to earthquakes, because I would not want to be going 800 miles an hour off the coast on piers in a tube and then have a massive earthquake hit. Just saying. I was really looking forward to talking to Chris today because I wanted to talk about some of the, you know, we talk a lot about encryption. We talk a lot about online safety and things like that and some of the technology that's going, that's coming out now to keep us safe. But I wanted to ask him specifically about some of the phones and tablets that are now being marketed to like the clandestine crowd. We've got like the Black phone, which is the new BlackBerry phone. It's going to cost, I think, $1,000, but it's supposed to be absolutely unbreakable, unencryptable. And then over the weekend, BlackBerry announced that they're launching a new tablet, and this is also going to be an encrypted tablet. But get this, it's going to cost $2,300. That seems like a lot for a tablet, but, oh, pardon me. So according to BlackBerry, they are returning to the tablet market, this time with the help of Samsung, IBM, and Secusmart, who is a German encryption specialist that BlackBerry bought last year. The SecuTablet is what it's going to be called, so the combination of security and tablet. SecuTablet is a Samsung Galaxy Tab 10.5 LTE with the 16 gigabyte bundled, but it has some pretty extreme software from IBM and SecuSART's special micro SD card, which combines a number of cryptographic chips to protect data in motion and also data at rest. The Samsung Knox Secure Boot technology also ensures that the OS on the tablet has not been tampered with, and IBM's contribution to the security chain is to wrap certain apps in an additional layer that intercepts and encrypts key data as it flows during the smart secure hardware. So across the hardware is there. IBM actually wraps some of the apps in another special coding of encryption. So is it worth $2,300 for an app like, or for a tablet like that? I don't know. I don't know. I think it's interesting though. I'm not going to lie. I do like to see technology moving towards where we can have, you know, fully encrypted devices at this point. So I like that. What I don't like though is, a new revelation that has come out this weekend at a friend of mine with a pretty gnarly email. You guys probably know. I used to do a lot of travel. I was working for the DOD for a long time, spent a lot of time traveling overseas and all around the country. Pretty much any place with a naval base I've been to, and also a Coast Guard. I used to work for the Coast Guard and the CIA, which lent me to rent a lot of cars. And our company went through Hertz. So my buddy, who still works for the company, wrote me an email this weekend. He was pretty surprised when he found out that Hertz is now putting cameras in a majority of their vehicles. All right. So Hertz for a long time had this system called the Neverlost, which is essentially their proprietary GPS system. It is in almost all of the gold Hertz. You know, if you're a gold member of Hertz, you get the cars with the Neverlost, you know, for free. But apparently now these Neverlost systems are being upgraded. They are moving to the Neverlost 6 model. I'll tell you, in the realm of Orwellian titles, the Neverlost is right up there at the top of the list, because I've been lost so many times. It's so stupid. You go to some country or some place you've never been, state, and you're trying to find some Navy base, and wouldn't you know it that they obscure all of the GPS around there to try and keep terrorists from being able to find where these Navy bases are if they're tooling around. Well, the Neverlost system is definitely subject to that, and I've spent many a time tooling around on back roads in places like Virginia and, you know, anyway, trying to find Navy bases because they're not keyed into the old GPS thing, and they're actually obfuscated purposely. But anyway, Hertz is now offering the next level Neverlost system, which is the Neverlost 6 system. And of course, what did they go ahead and do? Well, they added a camera to the Neverlost system, and it apparently can watch the entire inside of the vehicle, and of course there's no way to turn it off. But so my buddy got all upset. He talked to our, you know, at my ex-supervisors there at the company, and they of course got in touch with Hertz and said, hey, if this is actually the case, we're probably not going to be renting cars from you guys anymore, because we don't really want to be filmed. We don't know where that data is going. And we don't know where the data is going to. We don't know, you know, anything about this. So, here we go. Hertz came back and said, well, we do have the Neverlost 6 models installed. It's in about 30% of our vehicles right now, and it does have a camera. But unfortunately, right now, our bandwidth capabilities at the Hertz organization is not enough to support streaming video at this time. But that's what they say, at this time. Why would they be moving to put cameras in there, even if they can't support them right now and not turn them on eventually? So anyway, if you're somebody out there who travels a lot and is involved with Hertz, pay attention. You might maybe start carrying some black electrical tape with you, and you just start covering up those cameras on the Hertz Neverlost systems. That's probably what I would do if I couldn't get out of having to use one of their vehicles. Somebody asking me, oh, it's truth. What are we saying here? Look for the bait and switch on the bullet train. He says it happened here out in North Carolina's smart train. People voted on the project based on certain building costs. It's now 2.5 times the original cost estimated. Project was okayed, but there was no revote on the issue because of the inflated cost. So California taxpayers will now be paying higher taxes. So that's interesting, truth, but I got to ask about, was yours publicly funded? Were they looking for investors, or was that like an infrastructure development that was happening, you know, in terms of, you know, was it taxpayers on the hook there in North Carolina, I guess would be my question, versus what it seems like they're getting ready to do with the California thing, is that it's going to be all private investment to make this thing happen. How that's going to play out in the long term in terms of maintenance costs and things like that being funneled down to Californians, I don't know. That's a great question, and I'm glad you brought that up. Truth, always bringing me the good stuff, Truth, in the chat room. I'll tell you, if you guys aren't in the chat room, you're missing out on good stuff. Lots of articles being shared, lots of pictures and things like that. It's a great place to meet and greet some of the other listeners of the network and of the program, too. Okay, so what were we talking about? We were talking about Hertz. Yeah, don't rent Hertz right now or carry some stuff to cover up those cameras because, again, new cameras coming out in the Hertz vehicles right now. Also, still have the phone lines open if anybody wants to call in. Another little techie news here. A new class action lawsuit against Ford, General Motors, and Toyota rests on the facts that they apparently have known for years about the vulnerabilities to their cars due to hacking and have apparently done nothing about it. So according to this class action lawsuit and the lead attorney, who is named Mark Stanley, he says Toyota, Ford, and GM have deliberately hidden the dangers associated with car computer systems and have misled consumers. Today's cars use electronic control units, or ECUs, which are connected to a controller area network, referred to as a CAN or CAN bus. The ECUs communicate to the CAN with digital messages, which contain small amounts of data. And if a hacker can then send an ECU, a so-called CAN packet, they can control the basic functions of the car, including braking, acceleration, and steering. So it's scary to know that you could have been driving down the highway and a hacker could seize control of your car, and Toyota never mentions this risk when extolling its technology to sell you the car, according to the lead plaintiff, Helen Cahan, in her written complaint. And on March 10th, she sued the companies for breach of warranty, breach of contract, and breach of consumer protection laws. Her 343-page lawsuit points to a 2013 study by the U.S. Defense Advanced Research Projects Agency, a.k.a. DARPA, which warned drivers that they are now at the mercy of the code that runs all of the electronics in their automobiles. And as such, unlike when their web browser crashes or is compromised, the threat to their physical well-being is actually pretty real. Researchers also found that cars could be hacked and controlled remotely back in 2011, but companies, auto companies did not do anything to address the problem. Since the information first came to light, car makers have done everything possible to avoid saying if their vehicles are vulnerable or not. But Massachusetts Senator Edward Markey has started demanding answers. He published a report last month where he revealed answers he had received from 20 car makers over their security and protection measures. The results showed that nearly all modern vehicles have some sort of wireless electronic connection that controls their critical systems, and that protection against hacking is often inconsistent and haphazard. He also says that the findings revealed that there is a clear lack of appropriate security measures to protect drivers against hackers who may be able to take care and control of their vehicle, or against those who may wish to collect and use personal driver information. Very interesting stuff there. But again, if you can electronically hijack an airplane, how hard would it be to electronically hijack a car? Probably not very. I think I'm always harken back to Michael Hastings' fiery car crash there as well, and think that's probably pretty indicative of what was going on there. Also, a little bit of I don't know if it's bad science tech news or whatever, but the guy who invented the Keurig K-Cups, I got to tell you guys, if you're using those Keurig things, you are not doing yourself a service and you are not doing the environment a service. But there was an interview with The Atlantic. The inventor of those K-Cups actually admitted over the weekend that his single-serve coffee brewing pods have had a disastrous effect on the environment. John Sylvan founded Keurig back in 1992. He never imagined that his non-reusable containers would become so popular that they account for the large majority of Green Mountain Coffee's $4.7 billion of revenue every single year. But fast forward a couple of decades, and Sylvan has now got a ton of regrets, not only about selling his share of the company back in 97 for just $50,000, because that was dumb, but he also pointed out that at about 60 cents per cup, they're very, very expensive to use. Plus, it's not like the drip coffee is tough to make, highlighting how flimsy the convenience argument is regarding the disposable coffee pods. It's also should be noted that you can never clean your Keurig. There is a plastic hose that runs from the water tank to where the coffee is distributed. A, that plastic hose can fill up with bacteria and you'll never be able to clean it and you'll never be able to empty your Keurig. Once you charge your Keurig with water, that water is in there forever and brewing all kinds of wonderful microbial life and blah, blah, blah. But I can't even imagine somebody using one of these things. You'd have to use one once to realize. Plus it only makes what, like 6 ounces of coffee? You gotta use like 9 of those cups to get, I have coffee in the morning, ladies and gentlemen. When I say I'm drinking a cup of coffee, I'm not sitting here with a little teacup and my pinky in the air, okay? I've got 60 ounces of coffee in front of me. And it would take me 7 hours to fill this cup with a Keurig. And and you can't even fit a real cup underneath the Keurig. It's stupid. Anyway, so what are some of the other instances? What are some of the other concerns about this thing? In 2013, Green Mountain Coffee produced enough coffee pods to wrap around the equator 10.5 times. Okay. The new Keurig 2.0 does not offer reusable filters, and the existing My K-Cup filter does not fit onto that machine. Green Mountain Coffee only makes 5% of its current cups out of recycled plastic. You also have to wonder, what would the physical effects be from taking super hot water and running it through plastic a couple of times every day for, I don't know, a couple of years, however long you're drinking coffee? What do we know about the plastic composition? What do we know about the foil that they cover the coffee with? What do you know about the pesticides that are being used on that coffee or preservatives or anything? What do you know about Green Mountain? Anything. Nothing, right? Okay. Keurig's Green Mountain mission is to have a Keurig system on every counter and a beverage for every occasion. Yikes. The pods, here we go, are made out of No. 7 plastic, which cannot be recycled in most places. They have an aluminum lid, which is hard to separate from the cup. And even if the plastic, aluminum, and coffee could be separated, the pod is too small to be handled by most recycling systems. TerraCycle, who is a company that provides recycling solutions for spent coffee pods, has teamed up with Tamiso, Mars Drinks, Nespresso, and Lilly. But despite reaching out to the company multiple times, it has not been able to develop a relationship with Green Mountain or Keurig. You could add all this to the list that almost 1 in 3 Americans uses coffee pod machines rather than recyclable alternatives or good old-fashioned drip systems. Single-use coffee pod machines have increased by 600% since June of 2008 and show no signs of stopping right now. But again, a lot of health concerns, a lot of environmental concerns, and it's really not that convenient. I was a barista for a long time. When I studied music in England, this is a weird story, but I went to England my junior year to study in the UK and also ended up working at a bar over there as a manager because I was a bartender when I was here in school. And so I ended up working over there, and one of the things about bars in the UK, it was a restaurant also, but it was a big bar, but also had a restaurant. Anyway, I learned how to make coffee really, really well. We had, you know, like a $10,000 Italian espresso machine with the tank. And, you know, I really learned how to make a quality, latte and espresso, and met a lot of really, really good world renowned, baristas, people who really take coffee to an entirely different level than I do. And, you know, what struck me as unusual about all of these world-class baristas that I met is that all of them made their coffee at home in the same way. And a lot of you guys are probably thinking, oh, they had, you know, an espresso machine. No, they didn't do that, and they did not do French presses either. They do a pour-over, and that's what I use. That's what I've used forever and ever and ever. Melitta makes a really nice ceramic filter holder that sits right on top of your mug. You put your coffee right in it. You take your kettle, pour the water right over your coffee, and that's called a pour over. And most baristas will agree that that's the best way to make your coffee. And that's why I've been doing it that way. It's, you know, kind of comes out of the camping regime, but, the coffee's the most flavorful. I don't really like the French press. I don't want to clean up. I'm lazy. I don't want to do all that stuff. So if you're using a Keurig out there, I would really highly recommend you take a second and recognize that they're not really doing you a service. It's not, you know, what are you actually getting for the convenience of using one of those things? You know, I guess would be my question. Okay. Moving on. Let's see here. Just about out of time. I think we have time to cover up a little bit of health news here real quick. Let me go up and check, make sure there's nobody waiting on the horn. Okay. We're good. Appreciate you guys hanging out with me all morning here. How about 5 changes that you can make to your life to promote a healthier lifestyle? I was chatting with one of my good friends last night who put a picture up on the Facebook, and it dawned on me that he and I have held up pretty well. We're getting ready to have our 20th high school reunion next year. You know, some of the people around us just don't seem to be holding up as well. Granted, I do a lot of yoga. I try and take care of myself. I try and eat, and I've always had kind of a healthy lifestyle. But people always ask, you know, what are the things that we do to try and stay fit? One of the biggest things I've done recently – oh, thanks, Tavia. We appreciate you more than you guys know. Best listeners in the world, ladies and gentlemen, I swear. I really changed my diet quite a bit. I went to the Levitical diet. I stopped eating pork and things like that. I bought a $26 rice maker on Amazon. It was the best purchase I've ever made in my life. And I do rice meals, probably 3 or 4 times a week at this point. But, there's also been some supplements that I've started taking, and just some general lifestyle changes. And I saw this article on Mother Earth, and I thought, wow, this is a really good article because it's actually talking about some pretty substantially easy things that we can all do to really make a major difference. The first one, starting your meals from scratch rather than eating frozen meals or at restaurants. This is huge, 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 huge. Anything you're eating at a restaurant at this point is going to be convenience driven. It's going to be this processed garbage full of stuff that you do not want to eat. We feed all this crap to our kids and then wonder why they seem to have these ADHD conditions. You know, it's because we're feeding them crap. So really, one of the best things that you can do, to be honest, is to get a decent cookbook. Find a cookbook that's not difficult to understand and start making your meals from scratch. Again, I can't remember. I think it was Farfel. We had Farfel on maybe a month ago. I can't remember. He's an expat. He's essentially escaped Argentina, if I'm not mistaken, and now lives in Ireland, if I'm not mistaken. But he's got a great blog. I can't remember what it was, but one of the articles on his blog was talking about this particular rice maker that I bought from Amazon. It was $26. It's got a steam tray on it, and you can do vegetables and rice. I swear, it's the best thing ever. It's $26. You put your rice in the bottom. You throw a little bit of coconut oil and some hoisin sauce in there. Throw your vegetables in. Put a little bit of meat. Close the lid. Push the button. Walk away. You got a meal. I mean, you got a healthy, healthy, healthy meal. And that's so much more convenient, than going to a restaurant or buying fast food. And it's so inexpensive. You're talking about maybe $3 for a meal that you can eat, you know, for 2 days, for gosh sakes. So when I did that, that really changed my life. I also started using the essential oils, EVOs, the essential fatty acids. Is that, am I saying that right? The EFEs, essential oils, things like that. That's a super big deal in my life now too. Switching out your products is another huge deal. Trying not to use, the poisonous products on your body, the poisonous deodorants, the poisonous, toothpaste, things like that. There's so much of that stuff, that you put on your head and in your body. Getting away from all that stuff. I'll tell you, once you start eating better, the need to use poisonous deodorant really goes down. You got to understand that when you never want to use an antiperspirant either. You don't want to close off your whole lymphatic system. You got to let that thing, you know, you're trying to get toxins out. That's why you're smelly. So not using things to bind that stuff up is important. Not using toxic consumer products like shampoos and toothpaste, super duper important. Apple cider vinegar. I cannot speak highly enough about adding apple cider vinegar to your diet. I try and take a shot. I dilute it every day because I'll tell you what, it's a little bit intense when you take it. But get the organic with the mothers in it and start using that every day. That, I swear, has made such a huge difference. And then also getting enough sleep. Understanding that it's okay to take a nap in the afternoon, guys. Seriously, you're an adult. You can take a nap. We've had an article about how 20 minutes sleep, half an hour a nap, will mitigate the damage that losing 2 hours of sleep at night will do. There's a lot of hormonal damage and stress indicators that rise up when you're not getting enough sleep. So get enough sleep, guys. Take a nap in the afternoon, even if it's only a half an hour. Man, I wish I lived in a country that did a siesta every day. That would be great. Okay. We're out of time, ladies and gentlemen. I really appreciate you guys hanging with me for that whole 2 hours. I realize missing out on Chris Kitsy was a bummer, but hopefully he will be doing okay. Essential fatty acids. I did say that right. Thank you, Robert. Anyway, tomorrow, who we got on? Linda Moten Howe. Oh, my gosh. We're going to be talking about some amazing things tomorrow, so you guys will definitely want to stick with us for that. Appreciate you guys all being here. We are out of time. This was, of course, the Red Pill Reports for the 16th day of March. We will see you guys again tomorrow. Good luck out there. Take care. Keep your head on a swivel if you're in Saudi Arabia, just as a heads up. All eyes on Russia. Hey, stay tuned for Roger Sales Show, too, coming up right now. See you guys tomorrow, guys.
Truth Frequency Radio is your number one source for news and information without the hate, hype, and fear. We are proud to bring you cutting-edge programs like The Kev Baker Show,
The Christopher Everard Show,
The Freedom Link with Joe Joseph,
Truth Frequency with Chris and Shuri Geo,
Red Pill Reports
with J.D. Moore,
X-Squared with Brooks Agnew,
Down the Rabbit Hole with Popeye,
Freaky Friday
with The Woo Crew,
Waking Up the Masses
with Robert Bruce,
Phoenix Rising Radio,
and dozens more.
Did you know you can listen from any computer, mobile device, or from any telephone by dialing 832-225-5308.
Or call into your favorite show toll-free at 866-37-TRUTH.
Uncensored talk and news you won't hear in the mainstream media.
24 hours a day.
Truth Frequency Radio. Wherever you are, make it TFR.
Truth Frequency Radio.